I'm Alexander Ortega, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. Today, we have Terry Gilday, who is the current news director and local politics reporter from KUER 90.1 FM. After working for Texas Public Radio in San Antonio for 4 years, Gilday came to Utah to take over the news director position in August of 2011. His reports have been used for NPR programs on Morning Edition, Weekend Edition, and All Things Considered. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, you are the news director for KUER 90.1 and a local politics reporter. What's your background in news reporting and how did you come to be in this position?
Well, I've been in public broadcasting now as a reporter for probably, well, close to 10 years now. I started with a group in Washington, D.C. I was the original member of a group called Capital News Connection. It doesn't exist anymore, but we provided localized coverage of Congress for public radio stations around the country, about 230 public radio stations. So when NPR or national media sources were covering, say, the reauthorization of the Patriot Act in 2005 when I was there. I was covering a bill, perhaps, that was making its way through the House Resources Committee that would help fight wildfires in Colorado and Utah, or I was covering the debate over oil drilling on the Florida Gulf Coast and how that might affect the tourism industry, or I was covering the efforts to open up the Arctic Wildlife National Refuge, known as ANWR. So I got to learn a lot about very localized issues around the country while covering Congress. And, of course, learned a lot about covering politics in that job.
As news director, what does that title entail and how does it set you apart from your contemporaries at KUER?
It's a really exciting job. So I've been the news director at KUER for just 3 years now. I celebrated 3 years on August 1st this year.
Congratulations.
And thanks. It is really a wonderful job. I came into the newsroom with only two other reporters who were there. Jenny Brundin, who is a wonderful reporter who had a long tenure at KUER for about 15 years. She left and went to Colorado Public Radio in Denver just before I came on. I was a little disappointed. I was excited to work with her. But when I got to KUER, there were only two other reporters there. So I've had the opportunity and really the privilege to build up a reporting staff over the last 3 years. And we now have, including myself, seven full-time reporters and hosts. I wanted right out of the chute to turn the newsroom into a beat-driven newsroom. It's easy in public radio, especially in radio reporting, to be covering the story of the minute and everyone to be on kind of a general assignment kind of take. But there's so many fascinating issues that are unique to Utah, and there are fascinating issues that we need to cover as a newsroom. So I broke each reporter's assignment down into particular beats. So we have a reporter covering healthcare and business. We have a reporter covering education. We have a reporter covering the environment and public lands. We kind of do politics together. We cover the election seasons together as a team. We cover the legislature as a team. We all do days up at the legislature. I think that's important because I think all politics kind of informs all those beats, right? And so it's important to for all of us to sort of have our hand in political reporting.
And coming off of that, do you have, other than forming the KUER newsroom to be a beat-driven epicenter for news reporting, do you have sort of a personal mission statement for how you like to shape the direction of news reporting for KUER?
Well, I think public broadcasting is in a good position to serve the public in ways where news outlets that are driven by commercial dollars don't, right? So it's annoying, but every 6 months we get on the air and we say, if this service is important to you, pay something. Pay what you can. Pay $20. Pay $10 a month. Pay what you can. Even though the fund drives, I think, are stressful on us and definitely stressful on our listeners because we're asking them to sort of like interrupt their programming for 7 days. It used to be 9 days, only 7 days now. But it also gives us the liberty to not be adherent to any kind of commercial or advertising dollars. And so it gives us the chance to look into an issue in a way that best serves the public and try to inform our listeners in a way that doesn't necessarily push to a particular side or a particular interest or a particular commercial interest, but gives the information to the listener so the listener can decide for his or herself what's important about that story, how they weigh into that story.
In addition to being the news director, you're also a local politics reporter out in the field. What's that like doing both? And how does the latter inform being the news director?
Well, as I said, I mean, I do some political reporting. I think we all do political reporting. As a news director, I think, you know, I'm basically an administrator and an editor. You know, I spend my day assigning stories to our reporters, editing those stories before they get on air, working with reporters on longer feature stories that take 2 weeks to a month to report and put together. This would be, you know, a 6 or 7 minute feature that we put on the air. We've done several different news series since I've been at KUER. But I also feel like if I'm not out there in the trenches once in a while reporting myself, I'm going to lose touch with my staff and what they're dealing with, and I'm going to lose touch with issues that are happening in Salt Lake or along the Wasatch Front or in the state at large, where our signal reaches 80% of the state of Utah right now. So politics is an easy hat for me to put on. I've got a lot of experience as a political reporter, and politics in Utah are fascinating. They're different than politics in any other state in the country. They have so many different sort of cultural influences that push them in one direction or another. I think the caucus convention system, the way that it works, is really fascinating. I think that the influence of the LDS Church and other institutions in Utah definitely color politics here. And so as a reporter, I want to go out there and make sure that I have a solid understanding of that stuff for our listeners. So yeah, I am a local politics reporter. For example, with the congressional races coming up and the midterm elections, we're covering 5 races specifically, all 4 of the congressional seats and the attorney general's race. Mm-hmm. And each of us is assigned one of those races. I'll be covering the Mia Love, Doug Owens, 4th congressional district race, probably covering a few stories sending a few stories to NPR on that. But I'll be doing, you know, I'll be meeting with the candidates, interviewing them, doing profiles that'll be on our air. That the primary purpose is to let voters know what's at stake in those particular races.
I caught wind that a lot of Trib writers are coming over to KUER to be beat reporters. How's that been?
There haven't been a lot of Trib reporters that have come over to KUER to be reporters. There's one in particular, a former Salt Lake Tribune reporter, Judy Faze. Mm. And Judy was unfortunately laid off as part of the drastic cuts that the Salt Lake Tribune has had to take because their joint operating agreement has been restructured. And I'm pretty sure, I think some of that turmoil at the Trib, I hope, has been evened out. But Judy is a fantastic reporter. She's been covering the environment and public lands and air quality for 2 decades in Utah. You know, when I first got here, I wanted to inform myself on what was going on with inversions and air quality and the problems with particulate pollution in the state. One of the first sources I went to was Judy Faze's articles in the Salt Lake Tribune. Mm-hmm. I think people were looking at her byline and saying, she's really an authority on this. She has the institutional knowledge for this. Lo and behold, one day, unfortunately, it was horrible news for everybody, I think, in the city when we found out that, you know, more than a dozen reporters in the Salt Lake Tribune had been laid off in this layoff, and Judy's name was on that list. I was blown away. I was floored. I couldn't believe that the Tribune, and I don't know what the circumstances were behind the layoffs, and I know that a lot of them were financially related, but this is one of the best and most well-informed and most ethical reporters that I've come across in the industry, not just in Salt Lake, but throughout the country. And so I said to myself, here's an opportunity for us to bring a person in to our staff who has 20 years of institutional knowledge in issues that are extremely important to every Utahn, right? Air quality, public lands, environmental issues, and bring her on our staff. It's really hard to find a reporter who has that much institutional knowledge and who knows that much about the subject, but also has a Rolodex. I mean, Judy has been working her source list for 2 decades. She knows everybody, and everybody knows Judy. I can teach a person to do radio, but I can't just find a reporter off the street that has that kind of knowledge, that has that kind of talent. So I approached Judy and I said, look, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I would like you to come to work for us and see if you're interested in learning how to do the kind of journalism you do in a broadcast medium. And she said, I'll give it a try. And so Judy has been on our staff for more than 7 months now, and she has made the transition from print to radio seamlessly. She's a fantastic reporter. I think people are used to hearing her voice on the air now. She's really embraced a lot of the difficulties of making that transition. You know, she just used to have a notepad walking around the Utah Capitol. Now she's got to carry a digital recorder. Now she's got to think about how people speak in certain sound bites. Now she has to write in a conversational way. She can't have a sentence with 5 clauses. She has to have
right.
She has to have a simple sentence that's conversational, that people understand while they're driving their car or while they're changing their kid's diaper or while they're making dinner for their family, because people consume radio as they multitask, right? So we have to find ways to really bring that audience in. Judy has been amazing. She's exceeded my wildest expectations about how well she would be a radio reporter. So she's the only instance of an individual we've had from the Salt Lake Tribune who has left a job or been laid off from a job and come to work at KUER. You know, we have a relatively large staff for the size of our station, but again, our newsroom is 7 full-time people, including Judy, and so we don't have the funding streams available to really expand further than that at this point. But on the Salt Lake Tribune, I have tremendous respect for the reporters who work there, for the reporters who have worked there and have either, you know, been laid off from the job or moved on to other jobs. It's an incredibly important resource we have in the city and the state, and I'm rooting and supporting any efforts there are to keep the paper financially sound and doing the great journalism that it has always done and hope it continues to do.
It seems like with Judy, it's been a great success story in adapting her to radio. When bringing new people on, what's it like adapting people for radio, and then also people who may be shifting from reading their news to listening to it? How is it wooing those people, perhaps?
Yeah, I've been lucky in the fact that I've had some amazing talent just walk through the door at KUER at times when we've had reporter positions available. Andrea Smartin is a fantastic example. She had a decade of experience in public radio, and her husband was moving to Utah to take a job at the University of Utah's astronomy department. And so she walked in the door a few months after I had arrived at KUER, and I had a reporter position open, the position that Jenny Brundin had vacated. Andrea had experience working as a reporter at KUOW in Seattle, which is a fantastic NPR affiliate, and also WGBH in Boston. She was not only a reporter there, but she was an afternoon news anchor there. So to have that kind of talent walk in the door is sort of like winning the lottery, right? There wasn't a whole lot I had to do as far as Andrea was concerned. She had the talent and the chops and the skills, and you just plug her in and go, right? With KCBW staff dwindling, Whitney Evans had an opportunity to come work for us, and she's a fantastic reporter, and she came from a newsroom that did, at the time, really, really high quality news reporting, but it was sort of general assignment and kind of all over the place. And Whitney's really grown as a reporter, being focused on an education beat. Education stories are hard to tell on the radio, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, when I hear the phrase "No Child Left Behind," I immediately want to fall asleep, right? I think I'd rather eat cardboard than hear a story about education policy, right? About a bunch of educators in the room talking about weighted pupil units and No Child Left Behind and Common Core. I mean, that stuff just puts me to sleep. Whitney does a great job breathing new life into that and finding examples of how those kinds of education policies are working in the classroom and working with students. And, you know, and education is a tremendously important topic in the state of Utah. We have this sort of family values, family-centered vibe going on in the state, yet when it comes to the amount of money we spend per pupil in this state in public education, I mean, we are near the bottom. We're down there with states like Mississippi and others that don't spend nearly as much as other states do per pupil. And I'm not saying that throwing money at a situation is going to fix anything, but it is telling if you look at the numbers. And so Whitney does a great job with that beat as well.
Whom do you feel your news reporting audience is? Is it soccer moms? Is it construction workers? Who are the people whom you have a sense of that listen to your programming?
I think the people who consume KUER, and I'm not talking about the people who financially support it, I'm talking about the people who consume it every day. It's a cross-section of all kinds of different folks. It's a cross-section of people from different backgrounds, different religious affiliations, different political points of view. I think the tendency is to sort of frame NPR and public radio and public broadcasting as kind of a liberal counterpart to Fox News or something else, and really it's not that at all. It really strives to inform listeners, and I think that I've talked to people from all over different political spectrums and religious spectrums, and they're loyal listeners to KUER. Do they support it with their dollars? Some do, some don't. Really, only about 10% of our listeners actually put their money where their mouth is and donate to us. But again, I'm not trying to make a case for whether someone should donate to KUER or not. It is a free service. It's out there for folks, and I think that a lot of different people depend on it, whether it fits into what their political or social values are. It's a resource for them. It's a resource, and they depend on it, whether they support it financially or not.
Is there an audience out there whom you're aware of that you're looking to have listen?
Well, I think you know, the stereotype with public radio is that the folks who listen are about 57 to 75, right? And they're an older demographic, and public radio doesn't necessarily connect with youth. I think we're always trying to raise the profile of folks who have been listening to public radio. We're always trying to tap into a younger audience, right? I don't know if that stereotype holds true. I started listening to public radio when I was 14 or 15 years old and didn't really stop listening. And it wasn't my parents that got me into it. It was another friend of mine, a guy I was working for in a bicycle shop, who had public radio and classical music on all day long, and I began to really speak to me in lots of different ways. But there are wonderful shows that are produced by NPR and Public Radio International and American Public Media and Public Radio Exchange. They're not necessarily looking to try and snare a young audience, but because they're so fascinating and interesting and thought-provoking, they are snaring a younger audience. I'm talking about Radiolab. Snap Judgment is a great program that we just started airing about a year ago. This American Life continues to be a staple of public radio storytelling. And I think the news magazines, too. Morning Edition, All Things Considered, I think a younger audience is tuning in to KU. We are into NPR.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie.
Ben Winslow is a multimedia journalist for Fox 13 in Salt Lake City. Winslow started his career working for KSL Radio and then the Deseret News, covering areas like the Winter Olympics, Elizabeth Smart, Lori Hacking, and Destiny Norton's murder cases. Winslow quit his gig at KSL to join Fox 13 in the fall of 2010, becoming one of the news station's most prolific reporters. During his time with the station, he's become one of the most followed people in Utah on Twitter. Ben, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Have a little bit of background, KSL Radio, Deseret News. How'd you come to be a reporter for Fox 13? What's the full story?
Yeah, I worked for KSL Radio. I started at a radio station in southern Utah. It was a full-service station. It was actually a heavy metal station in Cedar City,
cool,
of all places. It was a full-service station, so we did news, sports, and then we did news, and music. So, you know, in between Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, Van Halen, we would do news. And so I did that. I worked a little bit of freelancing for the Salt Lake Tribune, and then got a job up at KSL Radio, working the overnights and doing that for a few years and covered a lot of different stories because it was a news talk station, of course, and then found my way over to the Deseret News, where I was a full-time crime reporter.
Oh, wow.
You know, spent a number of years at the Deseret News covering crime all the time, and I left the Deseret News and went back to KSL for a very brief stint when Fox called me up and said, you know, how'd you like to come be a TV reporter? And I was like, okay. It was definitely an adventure because I'd never really done television before. I mean, I'd worked around television, been around it, been on television a couple of times, but never really did it full time. And so that's kind of how I wound up doing it. And, you know, it's been a fun gig.
Cool. You have some sort of updated ways in which you disseminate news to the Utah public, one of which is your Twitter feed. I was looking at it today.
I love the Twitters.
Today I saw on your Twitter feed that you were a part of a story where there was a heroin bust for 31 pounds of heroin.
Yeah, it's enough to light up the Salt Lake Valley.
Yeah,
That's the thing I do love about this job is every day it's something different. Today I'm covering a heroin bust. Tomorrow I may be covering a transit authority meeting or a city council thing. It's just, it's always something different. And yeah, that was today. Today's adventure was I learned about supply, demand, economics, and heroin. So a lot of fun.
And so there are obvious benefits to using Twitter on a more personal level. Why do you use Twitter to promote your stories?
I don't just promote it. I like to think of it as a conversation, because I'm a big believer that social media is just that. It's social media. I like to share the news, what's going on. People like to, I think, read it and find out what's going on. I enjoy the communication with people. You know, people will share pictures or something if they see news happening, you know, and disseminate it that way. And I just enjoy it. I like the nature of Twitter. Certainly a lot more. I do use Facebook somewhat, but not as much as I spend on Twitter.
And how do you feel like that Utahns respond to Twitter?
I think there's quite a bit of people who are on it, a large group. I think that there's a lot of people who I've found there's different groups. There's joiners, there's lurkers, and then there's engagers. And so there's people who join Twitter, they sign up, and, you know, what is this thing, the Twitters, you know, and you know, and you see that. And then there are the people who say, oh, I follow you on Twitter. And I say, oh, great, you know, what's your Twitter handle so I can follow you back? And they, I don't do it. I just read the stuff. So they kind of just lurk in the background and read all the stuff. And that's
okay.
Fine. That's great. And then there's people who engage, you know, who have conversations with you.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun, you know, just chatting about this, that, or the other. I really enjoy it for that reason. And I also think, you know, sometimes it's kind of a fun format because it's not, it just moves so fast. It kind of facilitates, I guess, that ADD nature in all of us.
Right. Which is especially facilitated by the age of the internet and Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
You use Facebook a little bit. Do you use any other social media forms? Instagram?
I do use Instagram. Yeah, I love Instagram. I have a lot of fun with that. I use it just every now and then because it seems like it's a different type of, you know, thing. But it's always fun to see different pictures and to share different pictures. I used Google Plus for a while. I think I was one of three people in the world who used it. And, I like the style, the design of Google Plus, mm-hmm. but I'm just, you know, it's not a lot of engagement, not a lot of back and forth or interaction like I see with Twitter. And,
yeah.
You know, it's different things for different people. And I realize that, you know, some people really love, say, Google Plus or really love Facebook. You know, Twitter's just kind of my personal favorite.
Cool. You're tweeting often live photos you take and whatnot, mm-hmm. engaging in conversation. You're a field reporter, so mm-hmm. to speak. Is that the correct title?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And so do you prefer reporting from the field? Is that...
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun because your office is different every day. And some days are better than others, believe me. you know, some days you get sent to some really awful hellhole and you're just, you know, up to your knees in mud or some disaster, and, you know, and it's no fun for everybody. I mean, you know, and then some days, you know, you go do something really cool and really fun and really exciting. You know, it's just different every day. And that's, you know, one thing you'll see sometimes on Twitter or on Instagram. I'll post a picture of something and it'll be like, view from my office. Because every day my office is a different place. You know, I could be in a courtroom one day, at a disaster the next day, you know, at a municipal meeting the next day after that, you know, just different places. It's a lot of fun.
And it seems like with field reporters for TV news stations, you know, there's a certain sense where you have to maintain a neutral persona or something mm-hmm. like that. And you're going to, like you said, varying places mm-hmm. day by day beyond like the sort of neutral persona. Like, what are your interests, or what would you someday want to report about?
You know, I have a lot of different topics that I like, I find fascinating. I guess it's what interests me and what I certainly hope interests other people. You know, there's some stories that I'm not a big fan of, or I don't really like to cover, and then there's others that I really enjoy. I honestly never thought I would like covering the Utah State Legislature. In fact, my boss at Fox had to make me go cover it, and now it's in a kind of strange, sick way. I look forward to it every year because it really affects a lot of people. What those people do up on the Hill affects every citizen in this state on some level or another. That's kind of the joy of this, is you get to try different things and you get to experience different things and tell people why this is important, why this is relevant, why this affects them.
And so how about with those more difficult stories? You reported on Elizabeth Smart, whom I actually went to junior high with, and Lori Hacking. How do you, I guess, deal with the emotional response to an assignment like that? Or, you know, that's something that's obviously really difficult to digest.
It's hard. It's hard not to get emotionally affected. You are watching people in great emotional turmoil, and it is not easy to maintain sometimes that impartiality or that objectivity that it's hard not to feel empathy. And I think that, you know, I mean, I'm not a robot. I certainly do feel these situations, especially, you know, when there are crimes involving children, it really gets to me. I don't like them because it's just, you know, I mean, these are horrible tragedies. And, you know, it's tough. I think it affects all of us. You know, all of us reporters, we're not just these, you know, stoic people who stand in front of a camera or on the radio or, you know, even a newspaper writing these things. It does affect you. And, you know, I've got to be honest, it does get to me sometimes. But you also, you know, one thing you have to remember is we're trying to tell people's stories. We're trying to share what's going on and you know, hopefully, you know, it does some good in finding ways to stop these things. If it's a horrible thing, stop it from happening again. Or if it's good news, sharing that good news. You know, just bringing people together to see what happened and experience it.
With Fox 13, you know, there's kind of like the evil, scary man of the Fox Corporation that's like conservative pundit.
We're not the news channel,
yeah,
first of all.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but when I always grew up watching Fox 13, it was just like, oh, it's The Simpsons, and now Fox 13, and then there's Bob and Hope Woodside, and it always seemed like it's kind of like a more fun sort of news station, like, and kind of
a lot of fun.
Yeah, a little less traditional, almost, than the other ones. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It is a pretty non-traditional newscast in a lot of ways. I mean, in the sense that we also, not just from the reality of it, which is we have a primetime newscast, we're on at 9 o'clock, we have hour-long newscasts versus half hours, but, you know, we do have a lot of fun. We take a different approach sometimes to how the news is done, and you know, I think people do respond to it, and people like it a lot. You know, it is different, and, you know, sometimes different's good.
Yeah. Is there an example you can give, like, from the inside of how Fox 13 has functioned in a fun, non-traditional way?
You know, just even in just the culture, you know, we do have a lot of fun, and, you know, we take a different look at sometimes some of these stories we cover, and, you know, sometimes approach it from a different way. I really, it's tough to pinpoint exactly what it is, but, you know, we're a plucky little newscast.
Cool. Ben, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, anytime.
Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Next week, Jeffrey Stedman's going to come in to talk about local theaters, and Jimmy Martin will be back soon to discuss the fall movie schedule, and we'd like to hear what you're most looking forward to seeing this fall. Send us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com, hit us up on our Twitter @slugsoundwaves, or on facebook.com/slugsoundwaves. We may just bring it up on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine. It's produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, that's me, and Genevieve Smith. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. The main logo and art design is by Nicholas Dowd, and the technical design is by Kay Colgan. See you next week.